Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig. Today we are live, 713-526-5738. Abraham is my engineer today. And it's open forum, so you guys can talk about anything that is on your mind, any epiphanies you've had, any news you've seen that you might want to talk about, anything interesting, amusing, thought-provoking. I'm going to take my show in a little different direction. I have some current events. There's lots of current events. It's kind of unfortunate there's so much current events. But there are a couple of things that I wanted to sort of discuss. Something a little different. The first thing, I was talking with a friend a couple of nights ago, and we started talking about things like guaranteed minimum income, automation, people losing jobs that they'll never get back. And my feeling was that I needed a word to describe that could take a complex concept that may require many words and try to find something that can boil it down. So I came up with the word disemploy or disemployment. Now, because I believe you should Google before you write, just like think before you speak, I found that, unfortunately, I had not made the word up. However, I think it's a word that we can employ differently, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to do in the English language. We do it all the time. So let's start with this. According to a site that I found, and I've got this on the website with links to my blog post, thinkwingradio.com, for today's show, there are four types of unemployment. There's frictional unemployment, where people are between jobs. Structural unemployment, when people are laid off because of technological advances or other structural changes. Cyclical unemployment, which is typically when you're laid off because you've got busy times a year and not so busy times a year. And seasonal unemployment, which, you know, you work for Christmas or whatever and then you get laid off, and that's kind of the plan. I want to redefine disemployment. To disemploy, according to Merriam-Webster, is to dismiss from or put out of employment. I don't think that's a really cool definition. I want to use that word differently. I want to use disemployment in the sense of structural unemployment, which I think is a clumsy word that people don't understand. It sounds too technical. I want to use disemployment to mean people that have lost their jobs to robots and other forms of automation, and there is never any intention that that job will exist again. They'll never get that job back. And I think that disemployment should be used instead of unemployment, layoff, redundancy is a popular term in Britain. This isn't about that. This is jobs that will never come back because they are displaced. And this came up in the context of what might justify a guaranteed minimum income. Now, way back in 1972, one of the things that got George McGovern clobbered was an idea that was similar to, but not framed as, a guaranteed minimum income. And at the time, that seemed really, really socialist. But one of the defenses now that might be applicable for a minimum guaranteed income is that with the, let's be frank, with the essential collapse of unions in this country, certainly in the private sector. There was a time before that when companies would become more efficient and they would get more production per hour, per day, and people would lose jobs, but the people remaining would share in that increased efficiency with pay raises. The unions basically negotiated that. And what we've seen in about the last 30, 40 years, as unions have lost power, starting really with the Reagan years, really, I mean, it was kind of trickling before that, what we've seen is that real income after inflation has been relatively flat for about 30 years, while corporate income and income from the rich, basically the people who own, run these different businesses and mega businesses, well, their income has gone way up. So there hasn't been that synchronized march toward better that used to exist with unionization. So what I would like to do is use the word disemploy instead of a layoff or unemploy, because disemployment to me is a job that is going away because of technological advance, not because business is slow, not because it's a seasonal difference. And I think that if we can use that word that way, I think it will really help people to crystallize in their minds that there is a distinction to the reasons people lose jobs. I have read, and I can't cite anything, I can just tell you I've read it in relatively reliable sources, that the United States right now is actually producing more in factories, including, I think, steel mills, if I'm not mistaken, than ever before, but with fewer people. That sort of comes to the heart of structural unemployment, disemployment, jobs that will never come back because they've been superseded by technological means of one sort or another. Now, of course, we want those people to be working. We don't want a minimum income to be just a dole that people choose to live off for the rest of their lives. But if this is going to be the future of work, then we really need, and I know I'm not the first to suggest this, then we really need ways of re-educating and retraining people who are disemployed. This is nothing new. In addition to that, I'm also old enough to recognize that there is an age range where not only is it very, very hard to get a job, but to be frank, it's very, very hard to negotiate the new technological world. My stepdaughter is 27 going on 28, and there was a time that I thought I could give her a little advice or guidance on doing this or doing that, and I realize now there's very little of that I can do. I can talk about, you know, personal stuff and relationship stuff and, you know, stuff that doesn't change much, but when it comes to the work environment, the job market, there's really nothing I can do to help her. So when you get to that age range, then somehow society has to find other ways of utilizing your institutional knowledge, your institutional experience. That is where we are losing a lot of value. It happens, for example, at NASA, places like NASA. I'm not going to say NASA only, where you have people with long institutional experience. Remember the Apollo program. Remember the Voyager missions, the Pioneer missions. And there are younger people there that don't have that experience, that institutional memory, that institutional knowledge. But these other people that are older, when the layoffs come, these are the people that take retirement. So you have a lot of young people reinventing the wheel. So that's my thought. Let's start using the word disemployment as a euphemism for people displaced from their jobs permanently by technological or robotic advancement. And I think by focusing on that one word and making that the meaning of it, I think that will help us more strongly convey the idea. So join me in redefining a word in our language. That could be fun. Okay, we have open forum. The number is 713-526-5738. We do have open lines. There is another thing I want to get to, but I'm going to give Scott a chance to talk since he's on the line. Scott, you are on the air. How are you doing today?
Irvine, I hear the Democrats want to raise your taxes to 70% of your income.
Well, if you're making over $10 million a year, yeah, anything over $10 million, they want to tax at 70%. Are you in that neighborhood?
No.
Okay. Then actually, nothing to worry about.
It's just part of your income above something that's would be taxed at 70%. And I did not understand this until this past week when it became a matter of controversy. And I checked it out with my sister, who is a CPA, mm-hmm. and she said I was understanding it correctly after I got a few promptings on Facebook.
And what, I'm sorry, what is your understanding? Is it what I said or something else?
Okay. A person's income is divided into segments.
Yes.
And the first there's a segment at the lowest rate and then a segment at next rate.
Yes.
And it goes up to.
Right.
And if you only make a certain amount of money, the higher rates don't count.
And here's an important distinction as well, which basically goes into what you're saying. Just to grab a number out of thin air, if there is a tax rate that tops out at $30,000, let's say for the sake of argument that's 15%,
uh-huh.
and if you make $30,001, it's only that $1 that's taxed in the next
bracket. Right, yes. Yeah. Well, back in my Republican days, the top rate was 90%, and I thought that was stifling, and, I didn't quite understand it, and I would read from opposition that nobody paid that amount, virtually nobody.
That's true. It's a nominal rate is what it is.
Yeah, and also these incomes you're talking about, that's the taxable income after deductions are made.
Yes, always. That's always the taxable income after deductions is always the number we're talking about.
And people get a lot of people who make a lot of money get a lot of different deductions, all kinds of possibilities. Tax laws, you might say, are an audit trail of the country's special interests.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, or social engineering. It's complicated, but there are people who make a living figuring out other people's taxes. My sister just retired from doing that. When she told me it was tax season, she was kind of unavailable.
Yeah.
Very busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's their Christmas.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I didn't have to. It was easy for me to figure my taxes at one time because I just went to the tax tables that the IRS provides. I didn't have to understand how these brackets worked.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I came up with a saying just a few days ago on Twitter, with apologies to Penn Jillette, that right-wing anger about taxation is really just the result of bad math.
Yeah, and I am worried that the Democratic Party is going to be harmed by this issue, that it's going to be widely misunderstood.
Well, of course, you get to a point, and I'm going to have to let you go in a minute because I've got another caller, but you get to a point where if you're defending against the other person's attacks, you're losing.
Yeah.
So the explanation has to be in the platform.
Yeah, well, I sort of wish that AOC had not put us in this position. You know, I think the press kind of enjoys having a person on the left who is who makes mistakes and is vulnerable, doesn't it? I think Jane Fonda got a lot more publicity than some better informed critics of the Vietnam War.
Well, AOC is the next shiny new thing. I wrote recently in a Facebook post that I like her in general. I think that she says things that need to be said, and I think it's good that there is now a media presence, someone who is covered saying the things she needs to say. But the saying that Google before you write is the new think before you speak, I think AOC would benefit from both these things, both Googling and thinking before she speaks.
I do
it all the time. It's not that hard.
Well, this is not the first time when I've wondered whether the media picks a vulnerable person for a minority viewpoint.
But of course, they think she's vulnerable, but what they're really doing is expanding and strengthening her following, just like Trump got $2 billion in so-called earned media. Anyhow, Scott, if there's something you want to wrap up, I'll let you do that. Otherwise, I've got to let you go.
I think I'm finished. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 in Houston. Abraham is my engineer for today. And if you want to support KPFT, go to kpft.org, click on donate. Hopefully this show, but you know, it's kind of like food. It all goes into the same place eventually. You can also go to my website, thinkwingradio.com. I post audio files of my shows. I also have links to everything that I'm intending to discuss in addition to stuff I never get to, so there's a lot of things there. And I have a Facebook presence, Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig, and I'm on Twitter at Think Wing Radio. There's really no way to avoid me once you start to sort of get into that. I'm sorry. Well, no, I'm not. Okay, I am going to ask Melissa to wait a couple of minutes while I read something, and I hope that she will bear with me. It's something written by fiction writer Adam Troy Castro. It's a little lengthier than what I usually read, and for that I apologize. But I did feel that it speaks to something that many of us feel, but maybe have not articulated as well. And the title, with apologies, I'm not taking a political stance on this at this point, but the title of the piece is called "Why Do Liberals Think All Trump Supporters Are Stupid?" by Adam Troy Castro, and you can go to adamtroycastro.com and see more of his stuff. This is how his piece goes. An anguished question from a Trump supporter. Why do liberals think Trump supporters are stupid? The serious answer? Here's what we really think about Trump supporters. The rich, the poor, the malignant, and the innocently well-meaning, the ones who think and the ones who don't. That when you saw a man who had owned a fraudulent university intent on scamming poor people, you thought, fine. That when you saw a man who had it, who made it his business practice to stiff his creditors, you said, okay. That when you heard him proudly brag about his own history of sexual abuse, you said, no problem. That when he made up stories about seeing Muslim Americans in the thousands cheering the destruction of the World Trade Center, you said, not an issue. That when you saw him brag that he could shoot a man on Fifth Avenue and you wouldn't care, you chirped, sure knows me. That when you heard him illustrate his own character by telling that cute story about the elderly guest bleeding on the floor at his country club, the story about how he turned his back and how it was all an imposition on him, you said, that's cool. Then you saw him mock the disabled. You thought it was the funniest thing you ever saw. That when you heard him brag that he doesn't read books, you said, well, who has the time? That when the Central Park Five were compensated as innocent men convicted of a crime they didn't commit, and he angrily said that they should still be in prison, you said, that makes sense. That when you heard him tell his supporters to beat up protesters and that he would hire attorneys, you thought, yes. That when you heard him tell one rally to confiscate a man's coat before throwing him out into the freezing cold, you said, what a great guy. That you have watched the parade of neo-Nazis and white supremacists with whom he curries favor while refusing to condemn outright Nazis, and you have said, thumbs up. That you hear him unable to talk to foreign dignitaries without insulting their countries and demanding that they praise his electoral win, you said, that's the way I want my president to be. That you have watched him remove expertise from all layers of government in favor of people who make money off of eliminating protections in the industries they're supposed to be regulating, and you have said, what a genius. that you've heard him continue to profit from his businesses in part by leveraging his position as president to the point of overcharging the Secret Service for space in the properties he owns, and you have said, that's smart. Then you've heard him say that it was difficult to help Puerto Rico because it was in the middle of the water, and you said, that makes sense. That you've seen him start fights with every country from Canada to New Zealand while praising Russia and, quote, falling in love, unquote, with the dictator of North Korea. And you have said, that's statesmanship. That Trump separated children from their families and put them in cages, managed to lose track of 1,500 kids, has opened a tent city incarceration camp in the desert in Texas. He explains they're just animals, and you say, well, okay then. That you've witnessed all the 1,001 other manifestations of corruption and low moral character and outright animalistic rudeness and contempt for you, the working American voter, and you still show up grinning and wearing your MAGA hats and threatening to beat up anybody who says otherwise. And here's the punchline. What you don't get, Trump supporters in 2019, is that succumbing to frustration and thinking of you as stupid may be wrong and unhelpful, but it's also, hear me, charitable. Because if you're not stupid, we must turn to other explanations, and most of them are less flattering. I think that piece speaks to a lot of people, and it is something we can discuss if those of you out there choose. It's open lines, 713-526-5738. And Melissa, you are on the air. Thank you for being patient.
Hey, we'll have to check with the front desk people because it's Anissa. And
Anissa.
Howdy, y'all.
I'm sorry. A-N-I-S-A?
Yep.
Well, these things happen. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, I'm with you in the camp that wants to put these yahoos who are Trump supporters on a rocket ship and send them off to another planet.
That would be an appealing option if it was technologically feasible. They've done science fiction books about that.
Well, it's not technologically feasible. It's the fact that Trump is cutting our NASA budget.
Well, yes. Nixon did the same, by the way. I remember that. But I will also point out that I would settle for wishing Donald Trump a long life in a high security prison somewhere. I think that would be justice.
Yeah.
and his cronies. And you know what? We can even put his name on the building to flatter his ego.
Right. Well, I mean, I am 10 years older than your stepdaughter, I was one of the young women who decided not to nest and, you know, go through the baby years.
Mm-hmm.
I have my fur babies.
Yeah, me too.
But even still, you know, I mean, I found journalism, you know, too late. I found journalism in 2002 when I was at HCC, and I've been in public schools ever since elementary, and I dare say that honestly, I wish I found journalism a lot earlier than I did, or at least get on the boat earlier than I did.
Are you saying you are a journalist now?
Not at the moment.
But you're studying to be?
I might consider going back into journalism.
Okay.
I was in American Sign Language as an interpreter.
Oh, cool.
When I left HCC in 06.
Do you write for yourself?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Larry Niven?
No, actually, I haven't.
Larry Niven is now quite elderly. He's a very famous science fiction writer. He's written an enormous number of books, and I had the opportunity to meet him many years ago at a science fiction convention. I remember something he said, which I thought applies in a lot of ways in a lot of places. What he said was, I hate writing, but I love having written. And I think there's a lot of wisdom and insight there, and I think it applies many ways. So what I would say to you is, if you are contemplating journalism, there are two things, aside from education, of course, I think there are two things that can make you a better writer. The first one is reading. By reading other people's work, you learn a lot about structure and when you should write according to accepted structure and when you can break the rules for a genuine reason. And, of course, the other thing is just to write, to try to push yourself to write and then have people critique it. And even though no one likes criticism, learn from that, because you can't be looking over everybody's shoulder as they read what you write to explain what you mean. So if it doesn't explain itself to the reader without your prompting, then that's a stylistic thing to correct. So, I mean, in terms of, you know, advice that's always easy to give and hard to take, and I totally believe that, that's what I would suggest if you're contemplating journalism.
Cool. Well, I laugh. When the MAGA hats came out, we really should just reshape them into the Emperor's cowl.
The Emperor's towel?
The cowl that Emperor Palpatine wore.
Oh, the cowl. Yeah, the hoodie. A MAGA hoodie. That looks vaguely like Emperor Palpatine.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. I don't know who would buy it, because the supporters would probably, of course, they're so twisted they might like it, but the people that don't like Trump might not want to do any advertising for him unless they can make it very, very plain that this is satire.
Yeah. Which the Trumpians won't get anyway.
That's often true. Well, conservatives generally, I find, are very bad at humor. It's almost like a two-year-old that tries to tell jokes.
Right.
And the jokes are not only not funny, but unintentionally offensive, and I say unintentionally in a generous way. Dennis Miller used to be very funny until he turned rightward, and now he just isn't. His jokes are just mean and unfunny. And, you know, it's obviously something in the psychology or brain structure of right-wingers. They just see the world, and this is not an insult, I think it's just an observation, they see the world in a completely different way. And that's reflected in how they tell jokes, what they think is funny or humorous, or just how they see their politics. They just have a completely different worldview. And I think that liberals, we have to understand that and to some degree accept it. There are people that we're not going to get to change their minds, but I like to think, you know, as I say, an educated electorate is a prerequisite for democracy. So what we need is a better educated electorate, but that's going to take a couple of generations.
Well, if we keep having to put up with Betsy DeVos, we won't have an educated electorate.
That's true, and that's one of the reasons we need to get this regime out of power. And I call it a regime consistently. Okay, Anissa, I have been talking a lot. Is there anything you want to wrap up before I let you go?
No.
I appreciate your call, and I wish you well in your journalistic considerations. And just remember, read and write. That's the best way to get there.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. You take care. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can support this free speech radio station, your community radio station, by going to kpft.org, click on the donate link, hopefully attach the donation to this show as your inspiration, but as they say about food, it all goes to the same place. It is tax deductible. We are a 501c3. We try not to take overt political stances, so we try to allow you to balance anything we say. That's what free speech is. That's why we take callers. Okay, next up is Garrett. Garrett, you're on the air. How you doing?
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going? Thanks for taking my call, man.
Well, thanks for waiting. What's up?
I gotta say, I thought that the article was a real cheeky piece. That was pretty funny, and that's coming from seemingly now I'm throwing myself in the guard. I'm consider myself a Trump supporter.
Okay.
And I thought the article was pretty funny, I guess.
Now he does it in a way that's creative, that's not particularly offensive, although I could see how it could be taken that way. I think
right.
It's insightful in terms of digging out the feelings that a lot of non-Trump supporters have that maybe they can't articulate as well. So
right.
as someone who likes Trump, and am I going to say likes Trump or sort of likes mm-hmm. Trump or generally, how do you want to describe yourself? Are you like a full-blown Trump supporter?
Yeah, totally. And it's kind of like onions of appreciation or things that I like about him. So there's lots of very general things that I like, and then there's the smaller, more policy kind of things that I like about it. So it depends on, you know, which way you want to dive in. To that, but for me, what the article really does is, like you pointed out, it very much involves the worldview that many people on the left or progressives have about Trump and the way that they interpret certain things that have happened, you know, not historical things, but events maybe, and then kind of frames it like that is the way that it is, instead of viewing certain events in a different light. Like, I'm sure many of the things of why certain things happened are viewed in a different way coming from a more right-wing or libertarian point of view, especially like when you're talking about putting the families and kids in cages and things like that, when that's not what I guess that would be a debated topic. So I don't know. I guess I have issues with the article.
Okay. I mean, obviously I have it in front of me and you don't, so I'm not going to ask you to look at specific lines, but
right.
As someone who generally supports Trump,
yeah.
Is there something that I read that, you know, sort of you retained because it resonated with you somehow that you either feel is inaccurate or unfair or is true?
Yeah, totally. Two of them.
Okay.
Two of them come to mind in specific, and each one would, you know, require more digging into. But the one was putting families in cages, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of mock photos taken. And then I believe one of the photos of a child in a cage was when Obama was president. It wasn't even when Trump was president. So that would be one of them. And then the second one would be the Puerto Rico thing, saying that Puerto Rico is hard to help because they're surrounded by water.
Yeah, which is really stupid considering we send forces all over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's classically stupid. Would you agree?
Right.
And you know, they are part of the United States. They're Americans, and on the mainland, they're allowed to vote.
Well, yeah, totally. I'm not, you know, there's no reason to get hostile.
A lot of people, no, I'm not getting hostile. I'm just, a lot of people, okay. Honest to gosh, don't realize that. They think they're like a foreign country in the Caribbean.
There might be, yeah, certainly. I mean, I remember I was dating a girl that many people would call an illegal immigrant. A while back, she was a Hispanic girl from Monterey, I think, and mm-hmm. She didn't know what or where the Pacific Ocean was. Couldn't name several of the different oceans, which I thought was pretty mind-blowing, but that's a totally different thing.
Yes, it is.
The thing with Puerto Rico is I think that the president says a lot of things tongue-in-cheek, and he says a lot of things to really inflame his opposition, and I think that he plays the fool, plays the stupid person very often as a tactical device to keep his opposition guessing on what his next move is.
Do you think he plays the stupid person or he's just an ignorant person? And those are two different things.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, ignorance, as they say, is a correctable condition. Stupid is forever. Like your Mexican girlfriend, your Monterey girlfriend. I don't hold anybody responsible for what they have never learned. And
right.
I believe there's no such thing as a stupid question the first one or two times you ask. You can't be held
right.
responsible for what you don't know. I think
right.
in the case of Trump and others, I think there's either a flat-out ignorance or a willful ignorance.
Right.
And in the face of that willful ignorance, they still claim to be knowledgeable and expert on a topic.
Well, what's the I forget what the phenomenon is, but the more ignorant you are on a subject, the more you think you might know about it. But
something like that, yeah.
Yeah, Dunning-Kruger effect. But so I'm sure that he's ignorant on some things. We all are. But I think that he is generally quite well-informed, and I believe that he probably has a pretty well-established intelligence-gathering circle, I guess I would say. Kind of like if you've ever read or seen The Count of Monte Cristo, you know that he had a very developed underground intelligence through a lot of different networks. And I think that Trump probably has something pretty similar to that.
Well, it's called the U.S. Intelligence Services. I mean, he's got the entire federal intelligence.
No, not that.
Okay, you're talking about his own people, his political people.
Well, even before politics. I mean, he's been running in high circles for so long that eventually you start to gain information that is way, way outside the normal scope of what people hear from the media, or even if they think they have some kind of insider tip.
Well, now, understand that someone can be stupid and or ignorant and still be shrewd and street smart.
Yeah, totally. I don't think he's stupid. And like I said, he might be ignorant on certain things, but I think that he's generally well-informed and generally has his wits about him, and I think that he's probably quite the strategic thinker as well. But, I mean, this is all just kind of like speculation because I don't know, and I don't know if you know him personally or anything.
No,
like
I do
that.
Not. I mean, I'm from New York, so certainly I'm familiar with him, but I absolutely do not know him. Let me ask you this question, and I'm going to have to go to some other callers, but I want to...
Cool.
How do you feel about the way he has treated our allies, like Canada, New Zealand, the European Union, Germany, France, opposed to how he's treated our adversaries and enemies?
A couple of different layers on that. First, if we're going to go through it quick, is I believe that generally our allies have been working together with hidden sects maybe of the United States to try and conglomerate power and have been basically running a cabal behind the scenes.
Are you talking about the European Union?
European Union too, definitely. Well, with Britain, Australia not so much, but Germany, France. So I think that Trump is kind of breaking up this hidden cabal and consolidation of power that's been going on for quite some time.
You realize that the United States has had a policy of supporting European unity ever since the Second World War.
Yeah, totally. And I think that it goes back, you know, much farther than that, really. A good introduction to kind of maybe this realm of thinking is by one of my favorite geopolitical analysts, a guy named James Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, of the Corbett Report. A couple weeks ago, he published a three-part series on World War One, and it's prior to World War One, and it talks a lot about the hidden mechanism that sprung World War One and then eventually World War Two into place as a way of consolidating power, and through these various organizations, this consolidation of power has continued and conglomerated over time into what we see today. And I think that Trump probably knew that. His father was a part of the John Birch Society and was very against communism and the consolidation of power. And I think, I don't know how much Trump believes any of that, but I know his father was in on it. So I think that what he's doing is breaking through those barriers of hidden power and is really starting to expose the global power structure for how it's been operating for a while.
Okay,
but
Garrett,
if you look at it on the surface level, then yeah, it looks like he's just shoving his allies and has disrespect for them and da da da. But I think there's much more behind the scenes than what you see on the news.
Okay, Garrett. I appreciate your calling. I appreciate your point of view. I hope we'll get to talk again because I think it's important, no matter how much people might disagree with your point of view, I like the fact that we can have a civil discussion about it and try to clarify.
So I appreciate that. I actually used to have a radio show in San Marcos, too, so I'm done a couple of these in before. But it was great talking to you, too.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your call and your explanations of your point of view.
Cheers to you. Deport them all and build a wall. See you later.
Take care. Bye. Okay, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM, and Abraham is on engineering, and we're not going to do a station break for 7 more minutes, so the next one up is Tim. Thank you for waiting. Tim, how you doing? You're on the air.
Hey, I'm all right. Thanks for having me on. How are you?
Okay, my pleasure. So what's up?
I caught the beginning of your program, but I didn't quite catch all of it, but I got in whenever you were talking about a universal basic income, I believe.
Universal basic income. I don't think that's the phrase I use, but yeah.
Okay, yeah, just that concept. That's an idea that I don't know too much about. I've done a little bit of preliminary reading a while back, but it in terms of automation and technological advances taking jobs, it does seem to me to make sense in that an economy only works whenever a good amount of people can actually afford the things that are being produced.
Did you hear me use the word disemployment and try to assign a new meaning to it?
Right. I think I came in right in the middle of saying that. My question would be with one specific thing you said, where you said it wouldn't be a dole system where people could just live out on that.
That wouldn't be the intent, of course.
Right. So my understanding of it is that that is, if any kind of system like that would be put in place, that would be a necessity where you could have the option to work to have income on top of that if you wanted more disposable income for yourself. But for a universal basic income to work, it would be a living wage on its own. Are we having differing understandings of this?
Well, I think that when I talked about a universal minimum income, I think that's the term I used, obviously that's something that once you throw out the idea, the devil is always in the details.
One of the
means by which that's considered to be financially, fiscally plausible is you have these companies that are getting all these benefits from automation and robotization, but they don't share it with their workers in pay increases, and that the companies that don't do that, which it would be easy to figure out because they get labor deductions and stuff, those companies would simply pay higher taxes. Higher taxes based on the number of people they put out of work, which in a sense they do now with unemployment insurance. But it would be those additional taxes that would help the people that lose their jobs to technology, the people whose jobs aren't coming back, the companies that are doing well, would then contribute to a pool, much like you have for copyright music, like for a station like KPFT. We play music, and we are members of an organization that then disseminates small royalties every time we play a piece of music that belongs to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, in a very clumsy sort of way, I think that that's something we can do that might enable the possibility of a basic minimum income that would be viable fiscally. Because essentially the companies get to share one way or another. They can either pay higher wages, which is great because then their workers spend more money, which creates more consumption, which creates more jobs, and maybe will employ people who lost their job to automation. But we also do need to focus a lot, especially on people under 50, on retraining and teaching them how to get jobs that are in demand. For people over 50, it gets more complicated and sort of a separate conversation.
Right, right. No, I'm in agreement with you there.
Okay.
I don't know. I just don't know how I would ever be able to convince, say, I have some family members who are, like, whenever the term socialism comes up, it's just kind of like the end of the conversation.
Which is interesting, because we have socialism all around us.
Right, right, exactly.
I mean, the police and fire departments are socialist.
Right, and then pretty much everything that came out of the New Deal.
You think about the basics that people don't even think about, it's like, hey, that's a normal function of government. Road building is socialist. Social Security, of course, is socialist. Unemployment insurance is socialist. Medicare is really socialist. Fire departments and police departments are socialist. Anything that the government pays for with community money collected in some way is essentially, by definition, socialist. Now, we can talk about degrees of socialism. Does the government own everything? Does the government regulate everything? That's sort of communism. As opposed to fascism, which in some ways is indistinguishable from communism, except that you have the oligarchs who still own stuff, but they survive at the pleasure of the government. That's essentially the difference. So you've got an oligarchy working in cooperation under government orders under fascism, whereas under communism, the government simply owns and controls everything.
Right,
and there are degrees of difference, way difference between those two extremes that almost seem to meet in the middle of a circle.
Right, and so I guess my question there is if it's just a kind of like the frog boiling metaphor.
Yes, I've used that
in a more positive light, though, in the sense that getting this word out and getting the conversation started, where at first it seems way too radical, and then maybe a few election cycles down the road, the basic income becomes more of a mainstream thing.
The minimum income, I think, was first proposed in some form, as I said, by George McGovern in 1972, and he lost dramatically because, you know, it was like he's too pink.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of other stuff with McGovern too. Like
well, yes, but I mean that alone, I think, was enough to sink him, and then there was other stuff.
Hmm. That's interesting. Okay, I didn't really have too much to ask other than that, but I did want to ask I read the book last year, It Can't Happen Here.
Ah, I have to get to that.
Okay, because that book is probably one of the most prescient pieces of literature I've ever
Is the title It Can't Happen or It Can Happen?
It cannot.
Oh, that's not the book I'm thinking of then.
Is this the one by Sinclair Lewis?
Yeah, that's It Can Happen Here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, just wanted to make sure we're on the same book.
Yeah, okay.
But I have to read that book.
Like, kind of ironic because they were saying, like, oh, there's no way it could ever happen here. Yeah. Okay, I guess I was wrong on that. But, yeah, I think there's a famous quote from that where he says, when fascism comes to America, it'll drape itself in the flag and cross.
Interestingly, I don't think that quote appears in the book, but it's a quote that has sort of been taken. It's kind of like when people do impressions of Cary Grant and they go, Judy, 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 and he actually never said that line.
I got you.
Or Scotty Beam Me Up. No, he never said that line either.
Yeah, play it again, Sam, when it was just Sam. Gotcha.
Just Sam play it. So, yeah, it's better the way it's construed, but the line is different.
Right, and I guess my question to you seem to be pretty well-versed in a lot of these subjects that would be dealing with.
I'm eclectic.
How far away do you think, I mean, you haven't read the book, so it's not really fair.
Right.
But how far away is it just one national emergency away from a full-on police state kind of taking effect in America? Because it seems like we're on some kind of precipice where people are so entrenched on their side and their support of someone who is, in my opinion, demonstrated his unfitness for office, that how far can this cult of personality basically go, and how soon do you think that?
I think we'll have a fair idea by the end of 2019, when we see how much oversight and power the Republican, the Democratic House of Representatives has, and how severe the revelations from the Mueller and FBI investigations are in terms of then bringing some Republicans back from their brink and voting with Democrats to do what needs to be done. We'll see. You know, and that's really at this point all a lot of us can do. We can donate to causes. We can go out and demonstrate. We can work with advocacy groups. All of us have different ways and different tasks that we can do. I do radio, and hopefully that is a thing. But yeah, there's resistance, there's fighting, and that's where democracy may yet persist, but it's going to change in this country. It will have to, because we can't assume norms anymore, and legislating norms creates its own problems, but will be necessary. So there we are.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and keep on doing what you're doing. I've enjoyed listening to your show.
I appreciate that, Tim. Thanks so much for calling. You take care. All right, you're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org. Click on Donate. Hopefully think about Think Wing Radio when you get the drop-down menu, and give what you can. It's all tax-deductible, or 501c3. You can follow me at thinkwingradio.com, my blog. You can go to @thinkwingradio on Twitter. You can go to Facebook, Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig. It's all there. I'm out in the open, man. I am so transparent. It's scarily pathetic. Okay, so next up, I believe, is Johnny. Johnny, thank you for waiting. I see it's been a little while.
Oh, not too bad. I was just having a Palin moment, and then I was able to recover. I almost asked you if that was not Angie Dickinson, but Emily Dickinson.
Ah, yeah.
I thought she was the one who originated that idea about loving having written.
I don't know. I mean, I know I heard it from Larry Niven, but it's entirely possible that he took it from somewhere else. I've actually never researched it.
Yeah, well, one of them committed a Trump, that's for sure, and I really don't care which one.
Mm. So, what's up?
You said Dennis Miller.
Dennis Miller.
Used to be a liberal, think?
He used
to. I don't know about that. I never really thought he was too funny with his cryptic and or esoteric comedy references. I found that to be kind of off-putting and kind of, spurrier in a way, which is, in my mind, not really in the spirit of being a liberal.
Well,
you're making fun of Republicans.
His humor, as I recall, and I think he was basically on Weekend Update, his humor was wry, and it was, in some cases, amusing with depth. I don't know that he was ever a liberal per se, but he wasn't the right-winger he is today, and the writer he got, the less funny he was, is simply my observation. I've heard him do a few things on radio, you know, a few riffs, and they're just not funny. They're just mean.
Oh, I agree with you there. Since he's become openly Republican, he is not funny at all.
Yeah, he's out of the right-wing closet, so to speak.
Anyway, my contribution to the lexicon is having a Palin moment as opposed to a senior moment.
Okay. By the way, I still have several people I want to get to. I've got 8 minutes, and I want to try to get to everyone online.
I'll never take long with you. If I do, it's because you talk my ear off.
I'm sorry.
But that's okay. You're a good host.
I appreciate that. All right. Thank you, Johnny, for calling.
God pray for us all.
All right. You take care. All right. Who's up next? Is it Steve? Steve?
Can you hear me, Mike?
I can. Steve, you there?
Okay. I enjoyed that article so much that I'd like to read it again. And I was driving, so I have a pen and pencil now. Can you repeat the author and the name of the article?
Well, I can, but the simplest thing for you to do is to go to thinkwingradio.com, look at today's blog post, and I have a link to it.
It's called Think?
Think Wing Radio, all one word,
.com. Okay.
And just go to today's blog post, and there's a whole lot of stuff there. And this is like item number two, and there's links to it. You there? Hello? I think we lost him. Did we lose him? Okay. Think Wing Radio. That's all one word. ThinkWingRadio.com. And this is for all of you folks out there. I actually think there's some interesting stuff there to dig into. And, of course, you go link by link by link, and it gets interesting. I'm sorry we lost you. Who is up next? Is it Bill? Okay.
Hello?
Bill, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. How you doing?
Oh, I'm good. Yeah, I heard a caller earlier. He was a pro-Trump supporter.
Yes.
And
Garrett.
I think he was trying to make, the idea that, you know, well, Trump kind of speaks off the cuff, tongue-in-cheek, this whole notion that he's kind of a lighthearted speaker and that's how people can identify with him. He kind of acts like the big shot in the room, essentially.
Well, I appreciate it.
But here's my point.
Okay.
Go
ahead.
With that, you have to understand that I was listening to some interpreters, essentially, at the UN saying they have to interpret what Trump says in different languages. So as a world leader, he has a responsibility with language and words. And if you're lighthearted with your words, people in other languages and cultures might not understand what he's saying. As Americans, obviously, we understand his vernacular. We get what he's trying to point out. But if somebody's translating this, then they're going to look at it and be like, what is this guy talking about? I mean, to be honest with you, if he was my neighbor, I would get confused at what he's saying at times, you know? He's a world leader. I mean, he has an obligation to language him. Just makes America look bad. In terms of people investing in America, they're wondering, why did they vote for this person? This person who is so careless with language itself. And voters don't really seem to care about that.
Well, as an individual myself, who tries to be careful with language, I try to be careful about the nuance that people take from what I say. I totally, totally agree, and I think you make an excellent point. The problem is I don't think he cares.
No, and I think that he's lived an entitled life his whole life, and that's why he's so careless with his crimes. It's almost kind of unbelievable. And another point I would like to make is that during the election season, I remember kind of the motto that I don't like both parties. They're both bad. Democrats and Republicans are both bad. They're both equally bad candidates, but I kind of side with the Republicans more. But at this point in time, it seems as though the Republicans are siding with Trump no matter what.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to this whole line of thinking, well, I'm just voting for him because, you know, I'm more Republican than I am Democrat, and I've always voted Republican. But in light of all of these findings and all of this dirty baggage that we're talking about here, they back him up 100%, you know? I mean, it's a cult-like following at this point, and I just ask these people who support him, why do you trust him and not the FBI?
Well,
why do you trust him and not your neighbor who tells you things about him? this guy cheats on his wife. I mean, his wife can't trust the guy, you know? Why do you trust him?
Well,
you know,
I'm gonna
where did this kind of anti-establishment rhetoric go that we heard in 2016?
I'm going to have to butt in here because I do have two other callers I want to get. But I think, I think that the thing here is that there is a hardcore of people. Even Richard Nixon, when he left office, had an approval rating of like 29%. There is a hardcore of people that literally are psychologically, mentally, anatomically, structurally going to be in favor of Trump. And I say that without exaggeration. I believe that all of those factors. As far as the leadership of the Republican Party, who, you know, for all their narcissism and egotism, which someone has to have to be at that level of government, I think that there's fear. And I think that Occam's razor has told me that the simplest explanation is they're compromised one way or another, sexually, financially, whatever. The people that support him are compromised, and they're afraid of the leverage that will be brought against them. And I apologize. I need to let you go, but I hope you'll call again. We can have a longer
conversation. Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. Okay, is Charles up next? Abraham? I think Charles? Who's on the line? Charles?
Yes.
Okay, you're on. I'm going to ask you to make it brief, for which I apologize. Tell me what's on your mind.
I talked to a friend, and he said that they raised the retirement age. So evidently, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, that's how they made their cuts to Social Security, is by raising the retirement age.
Yeah, that's been getting done incrementally over the years, it's true.
And that wasn't reported on either CBS or Channel 8, KUHD, as far as I know, because I never saw it reported.
Well, I don't think that that was done in this Congress. There were some congressional actions that were going to increase the retirement age for cohorts born in certain years. And I think if there is a retirement age that is more than 67, I don't think that was passed recently.
Oh, okay. So they didn't raise it further recently.
Not recently, no. If there was an increase, it was something that was already structurally enacted.
I see.
And I disagree with that, because now that I'm 68, I understand better. You know, when you've had a physical working life, there just comes a time where you really just can't work anymore. You just can't. I have one more caller I want to get to. Do you mind? He's only got a few seconds.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. Okay, Wayne. Wayne, you've only got like 30 seconds. Who are you? It's not Wayne?
Hey, this is Lane. Hello.
L-A-N-E?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Lane, you got about 30 seconds, and then I have to sign off.
I'll do this real quick. When I was a social studies teacher, we had an economics book, The Science of Scarcity. You know, there is no profit without scarcity. And so that made sense a long time ago. But then we've got all this technology come along, everything from cotton gins to robots. Now we have this increased capacity for abundance. We have to artificially insert scarcity, which is just evil. It means people starve in order for profit to be made. And so we need to go to...
The historic Heights Theater on 19th Street hosts a wide variety of concerts and special events. Upcoming concerts include Texas troubadour Joe Ely, Friday, January 18th. Western swing legends Asleep at the Wheel on Friday, February 15th. A solo performance from outlaw country poet Steve Earle, Friday, February 22nd. And on Wednesday, February 27th, British psychedelic pop legends The Zombies. For more information or to get tickets, visit theheightstheater.com. This is KPFT Houston.
Human trafficking is modern-day slavery, and it happens in our own communities. Victims can be any gender, age, or race. Join the Department of Homeland Security's Blue Campaign to learn how to recognize and report this heinous crime. Visit our website at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. That's www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. Your second look could be their second chance. KPFT Houston.